This is Will, and you're listening to Two Man Congress. Okay, before we talk about our topic of the day, we have a little announcement. And it's actually a big announcement because it's quite a big mistake on my part. But as I was doing some website editing, I made a mistake, which resulted in the website being down for the time being, and we are currently working on getting it back up, but not 100% sure when that'll happen yet. We'll give you some updates as we go along, but the website is unavailable, but the podcast episodes are still available, so that's something that we still have out there. In the meantime, any of the articles that are on the website can and will be accessed shortly as soon as we as soon as we resolve this issue. But today we're going to be focusing on federalism and talking about the levels of federalism and how it works. And a lot of this is going to be a little bit of a discussion based off of the Federalist Papers, and then ultimately is going to lead up to a interview that we have with our first podcast interview guest. And so federalism is a process of where you have a federal government combined by a bodies of smaller governments such as state or local government. So you have a federal government, you have state, you have local, and then you could even argue that the smallest political body would be a family unit. And the reason why I say that is because you have several parties in a family, some with differing ideas and some with the same ideas. And the purpose of this body, of this family unit, is to take those ideas to create rules and policies that ultimately benefit the family unit and as they strive for growth and development. You can argue that HOA are political bodies and that student government boards are political bodies, all the way up to city, state, and federal government bodies. The reason why local government bodies doesn't get as much attention is because they don't focus so much on the high contentious issues like the federal and state governments do. But local governments are very important because they help develop a community and they are very relevant to the people living in that community. For example, I live in a small community right now in Utah. And my small community could be very different from another small or even a large community in Utah. But that changes more and more as you go from state to state. So you need all this local administration to be able to manage the political situations that are arising in the community, even if it's something as small as making sure that a pothole gets filled. And that's how simple politics can be, is it can start with as small as a family. And if you think about it as small as a family, well, then all the other things are able to be figured out as well. If you think of your federal government as a family unit with several millions of members, each with similar ideas and differing ideas, all of them trying to give collective rights to the people as instructed by the Constitution, and then those other rights that aren't enumerated in the Constitution are given to state and local powers, then we can maybe focus on solving those political issues in a much more cohesive way. With that said, our guest interview today is actually somebody who is highly involved in local politics and was very kind and willing to give us some instruction on feedback on what you can do and to be more involved in local politics. Before we get into that interview, I just want to say some of the things that you can do to be more involved in local politics is taking your expertise, whether you're a lawyer, an engineer, a teacher, whatever it might be, and just using that expertise to contribute to the community and doing everything that you can to be a contributive member to your local community. Because if you focus on making sure that you have strong local communities, that'll ensure stronger state and federal communities as well in our union. Well, even though we may be having some technical issues with our webpage, our Patreon page is still up and running and has some great features that you're able to use. You can be either a judge, a legislator, or an executive. Those are our three tiers, and each tier has given powers. Each tier has the ability for early access, and then some of the other tiers, you have the ability to vote on some of the topics or have access to work in progress, things that we are doing. And so if you want to go ahead and support us, you like what we're doing, go over to Patreon and sign up for a tier and be a part of that Patreon community. We're very grateful for those who are a part of the Patreon community and do everything that we can to help them with making sure we have the right material that is going to be beneficial. So you can go ahead and find us on patreon.com/twomancongress. That's patreon.com/twomancongress, spelled out TWOMANCONGRESS. So our guest today has had a very long and successful career. He first began his educational career by attending the University of Utah, and he received a bachelor's degree in biology in 1992. Afterwards, he spent a couple of years working as a quality control chemist and then received his Juris Doctorate degree from the University of Missouri Kansas City School of Law in 2000. He's also studied patent, trademark, and trade secret law at the Franklin Pierce Law Center in Concord, New Hampshire. With his expertise in IP law or intellectual property law, he's represented a variety of businesses in this field, including advising global franchisers and distributors on U.S. foreign policy, foreign patent and trademark acquisition and enforcement strategies. He's prepared and prosecuted several patent applications in a variety of technologies. He's also represented local, national, and international businesses in acquiring and protecting trademark rights and proceedings before the Patent and Trademark Office and the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. In addition to his work experience, he adds a lot of credit through his other accomplishments, which includes being a part of the Utah's Legal Elite by Utah Business Magazine in the area and field of intellectual property. He's also lectured on a variety of issues, including at the University of Utah Fine Arts Department, at the Utah Technology Council, and the Utah State University Research Foundation, and the Utah Chapter of Entrepreneurs Organization. Also, recently, he has started his own law firm. But our topics of the day is going to be local politics, and he, our guest, is elected mayor of Woodland Hills, Utah, since January of 2022. So please welcome our guest, Mayor Brett Winder. So thank you, Mayor Winder, for coming and participating in this. Like I said just before when we were talking, you are my first interview. So I'm, one, really excited, and two, really nervous. But what we're going to be focusing on today is why you decided to run for mayor and how the audience can really be focusing on local politics and what they can do to be involved in local politics. So to start off, why don't you just tell me your story about why you wanted to run for office?
You bet. And Will, thanks for giving me this chance to be here. And I am proud to be your first interview. So as far as the background of me getting into public office, it's kind of interesting because, well, first of all, I have always considered myself a fairly well-informed citizen, a fairly well-informed voter. But as I have gotten into sort of the depths of public office, it has made me much more appreciative in many respects. Just how many moving parts there are. There are just so many different pieces, even at this relatively small level. You know, we've got a very small city, and but there's just a lot of moving pieces that I had never appreciated like I do now. But anyway, as far as my origin story, so to speak, it was funny because I was actually at a wedding, and we were just my wife and I were having a casual conversation with our bishop, our ecclesiastical leader, and it was before any sort of campaigning had been done for this upcoming election. But you know, he, in a half joking way, he said, "Yeah, you know, we're going to write you in as a candidate for mayor." And you know, I had vaguely thought about running for city council. You know, maybe at some point in the distant future, you know, just with my legal background, it seemed like it would be a good fit. But when he said that, it kind of stirred something. And you know, it got my wife and me talking about you know, that would be kind of an interesting possibility. And then our then mayor, Wendy Pray, she approached me separately and asked me if I'd ever considered running for the office. And again, that was something that you know, it seemed like, well, maybe this would be a good time to do it. And so I started investigating it a little bit, and frankly, as I you know, got more and more immersed in city issues and you know, some of the things that were being managed, I felt, well, I'm not prepared. I'm not the guy. And I actually called Wendy and told her that, you know what, I've given this some thought. And coincidentally, my fire suppression sprinklers also started leaking at this same time. And you know, so I was trying to find a solution to that. And so it just seemed like it was all kind of piling up. And so I just contacted Wendy and said, you know, I appreciate your vote of confidence, but this is not for me at this time. But anyway, you know, over time, eventually I got to talking about the possibility with more people, and there were a lot of people that were, you know, very supportive, and you know, my limitations notwithstanding, they said, you know, they thought that I should give it a run, and so I gave it a run, and here we are.
Awesome. So, what was that campaign process like as far as managing a campaign, marketing yourself, so to speak, and anything along those lines?
Yeah, campaigning is a it's an interesting experience. I would like to think I'm not a self-promoter. I don't view myself as that, and it does require a lot of self-promotion. You know, I in my profession, you know, you have to sell yourself. I mean, that is certainly part of any, well, maybe not any, but you know, or as a missionary, I mean, you know, we're all engaged in sales in some capacity, all the time. So it wasn't so much that, but you know, it does seem like sometimes in politics, you know, you really have to go overboard on, you know, sort of selling your vision and selling, you know, your accomplishments, and that to me is it's not a natural fit. And so I didn't love that aspect of it. I'll probably, you know, become better and better at it, you know, selling myself. I hope I don't become that obnoxious politician type that is just constantly trying to tout my accomplishments. But in any event, that was definitely a challenge. That was something that was sort of an awkward fit. The other thing that I found to be quite challenging is that, you know, you don't know what you can do in any job until you've done it. And so part of the campaign experience is and frankly, it's I think the expectation among a lot of voters is, you know, you got to get in there and start telling them how you're going to solve problems. You got to get in there and start telling them what you're going to do specifically. But you really don't know what you're going to do until you start doing it. I mean, you can have high-level visions of where you'd like to direct things, but if you're talking specific solutions, you know, there are a lot of factors that you just might not be privy to. And so, you know, with that expectation, it can be difficult to really provide meaningful answers. And so, you know, you try to at least for me, what I would try to do is I would try to, and I'm not endorsing any particular political candidate, but I recently met with a senatorial candidate, and he didn't make a lot of promises in terms of what he would or wouldn't do, whereas his opponents seemed to go more in that direction. But what he did do is he articulated well, in my opinion, the underlying principles that he adheres to. And to me, that won my vote. So I think that, campaign promises are, they're difficult to really even make in a meaningful way, I believe. But I think that, if you're talking underlying principles, then those are elements that really can drive, a decision in terms of, who to vote for, and also just in terms of a campaign strategy. I may not be able to solve the city's budgetary woes in a very specific way, but these are the principles that I would commit to in trying to solve it.
I like that. And you had mentioned in your comment the expectations of offering promises and how those expectations can be kind of hard. And I know you just had your first town hall meeting, and even though I wasn't able to attend, I hope it went well. But in your town hall meeting, did you feel a lot of those expectations being on you? And or really, what were you feeling during that town hall as people were asking you questions?
Well, it was mostly panic. No, and I only kid, but so I was talking to a couple of the employees at the city before we did our town hall meeting, and they told me some horror stories about how some town hall meetings just devolve into these shouting matches, and we see those on the news, and so I was really I told both of them, it's like, look, you're getting into my head. You can't, because I had some prepared remarks, and I was just going to get totally psyched out if I started envisioning this just, total melee of people yelling at each other. I'm happy to report that was not the case. It was a very civil discussion, very respectful. So I think it went well in terms of the expectations. I don't know. The feedback I got was it was generally positive. So I'm sure there are some people I'm letting down, but they didn't tell me. And I guess if they do, I'll hear that too.
Of course. Well, thank you for sharing. So what's one of the biggest lessons you've learned about local politics since you've been a mayor?
Well, there are quite a few. One really important principle that I think I've gleaned from all of this is that it's very difficult to to be a part-time mayor. When our last mayor was talking to me about the job, one of the things, because I have a full-time job, I'm an attorney, and I was in a position at that time where I had enough time to, I felt like I could devote sufficient time to what I understood to be the expectations. I mean, it's essentially there's a small monthly, I guess it's a salary, but it's essentially a volunteer. I mean, I've calculated it costs me based on what my billable hour rate is and what the city pays me. It costs me $370 for every hour that I serve the city, and that's not a complaint, but it is, the reality of the situation. It's a challenging job to do on a part-time basis and to feel like you're doing it well. It's something where I spend, probably 10 to 15 hours per week trying to manage the various aspects of it, but I always feel like I'm leaving things undone, and that's challenging. you know, you don't want to do something and feel like you're doing a crappy job at it. So, you know, that, I guess to your question, one of the things that I learned is that it's a bigger job than 10 to 15 hours a week would really allow for. You know, in an ideal world, our city would have a full-time mayor and a full-time city manager. But we just don't have the money for it. So I think that, and this is one of the points that I touched on in the town hall meeting, you know, we get what we pay for. And so I think that as long as we understand that, you know, we're basically asking a volunteer to serve in this capacity, and we're asking the volunteer to you know, give up only a limited amount of time, you know, we can't realistically, in my opinion, expect anything to run the same as if we had a large budget, you know, with a 40 hour a week or 60 hour a week mayor and a 40 hour a week city manager. So I would say that's one thing that I've learned is, you know, that we have to be realistic in what we ask of our local government leaders. And my hope is that we would always just assume that people are trying to do their best and that they're doing this as a labor of love. You know, this is not a job you do to get rich, you know, and I've said this before, I'm not going to lie. It strokes the ego to be able to put that you're the mayor of the city on your LinkedIn page. You know, it's kind of cool to be in the Hall of Mayors. There's a hallway that has the portraits of mayors that have served, but you know, it's a labor of love. And so I think that, you know, it's important that we, and for myself, you know, I think that when I look at like our other elected officials, you know, like our state legislators, you know, that's a part-time, poorly paid gig too. You know, and sometimes I start with a bunch of assumptions about them, whether they're doing their job or whether they're doing it well. And I think that it's helped me realize that, you know, they're actually giving a lot and not getting a whole lot in return other than the satisfaction of trying to do that job for the benefit of the residents.
I find that really interesting. So basically what you're saying is, as a citizen, we tend to judge the politicians a little too harsh because, I mean, they're people too. And because they are people, they make mistakes just as everyone does. And there's this balance of where we need to find qualified people, but we also need to make sure that we are understanding of the decisions that they make and why they are making those decisions, because a lot of the time those things can interline to as they're trying to benefit the people. Is that exactly what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, and don't misunderstand me. I think there needs to be accountability. So I think there does need to be accountability. And if someone disagrees, and like you say, mistakes do get made. And you know, hopefully nothing too devastating in that way. But you know, if someone is not doing a good job, then there's a democratic process to, you know, make adjustments. You know, you run against them or you vote against them next time. So, yeah, and I don't know if I answered the question that you posed, but
no, you did.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I'm not saying that elected officials should get a free pass. There should be accountability, but for me, it's just been eye-opening. I've always been one that started with the assumption that anybody in government, there's two principles that apply. You know, they're either corrupt or they're incompetent. And, you know, I say that sort of facetiously, but I think those are some assumptions that a lot of us start with, that anybody that's in the government is, you know, and frankly, as an elected official, those are two hurdles that are challenging to overcome. I mean, so that's the starting point, you know, with the assumption that whatever you're doing, you're mismanaging it, or you're doing it for some nefarious purpose that is self-serving. So, you know, I mean, and that's kind of the nature of it, I guess. I don't know that it needs to be, but it's challenging. It's a challenging starting point. But, you know, my views in that respect have also been vastly changed. I'm not sure I still I might still believe it at the federal level to some extent, but at least with local politics, I really do see these individuals as trying to do their best. And another thing that I get to do and be a part of is there's this organization called the Utah League of Cities and Towns, and they provide training, and it's really exceptional. And it's just local elected officials, and you get together, and you're able to network, and you're able to share ideas and horror stories, and but as I've been able to mingle with a number of individuals in that way, it's just been eye-opening. I really do think that I'm sure you've got some bad apples, but I really do think that by and large, most people are doing it for the right reasons.
It's fun to see how, because you are newly elected. You've only been a mayor for a few months, so it's fun to see how things can change and how fresh it is in your mind still from what things were just a few months ago to how things are now because of the mayor and what people don't typically understand because they're not in those kind of positions. But let's go ahead and turn our topic just briefly to the people. The citizens of Woodland Hills, for example, what are some of the challenges that you think the people of Woodland Hills may have that keeps them from being involved in local politics?
That keeps them from being involved. I would say that is just we're all busy. It's really like, for example, well, I'll use this as a personal example. We recently had taxes raised at the county level. This was before I was elected, but I remember I was exchanging emails or social media comments with Tanner Ainge and about the tax increase, and I was generally opposed to it, although my opposition was really uninformed. I'm not saying that I'm a proponent of tax increases, but I hadn't really been to a lot of the meetings where it was discussed. I just had said, and I said to Mr. Ainge, basically, look, you got to give me the bullet points. If you want a tax increase, you got to give me sort of the 30-second version. And I think that he didn't make an effort. We, he was cordial, but he didn't make that effort. And maybe it can't be made. Maybe you can't sum up why the county at that time needed a tax increase in a 30-second summary. But I think that and that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier, is there's just so many moving pieces to this to really understand, even what goes behind decisions at a local level. It requires a significant investment of time. And so I do believe that that is a major challenge in getting involved at a deep level. It would be just that we're all busy, and that kind of involvement really requires almost a full-time effort. And so I would say that's probably, but I'm sympathetic to it, because that's where I was. I mean, I wanted, bullet points. I didn't want to sit in on, hour-long meetings or hours-long meetings, trying to get to the heart of the matter, but I just wanted, give me a summary, and I'll make my decision on that basis.
I agree with that too. Even one of the things I've learned with running this podcast is that time is the biggest challenge to go and research to be able to present material. Time is one of the things that makes it hard because we all have other things in our lives. And so I really have one last question for you before I let you get back to your day, but what is the biggest piece of advice that you would give to somebody who wants to become involved in local politics, but they're not sure how?
That is a really good question. I hopefully can give a good answer. My advice would be, first of all, when you go into it, It's a contact sport. You want to be ready, and I don't say that in an effort to scare anybody off, but you do want to go into it knowing that you're going to take some hits, and you're probably going to make some enemies, even if there's nothing you can do to avoid making those enemies. So I think you do have to be a little thick skin, and I think that your skin thickens the longer you do it too. I think that I know that for myself, just kind of being immersed. And Will, I know that you recently returned from your mission, right? Just within
Correct.
how many months ago was it?
It's actually been a few years.
Oh, a few years. Okay. Well, my apologies, but as you know from missionary service, I mean, it's something where it's very daunting to begin with, but by the end of your service, you are amazed at your ability to engage people in a public way or, start a conversation, So I think that with respect to political office, it's a similar sort of a growing experience. So I do say, just like a mission, you've got to go into it knowing that it's not going to be easy. It's going to be challenging, and depending on, the capacity in which you're serving, some positions are going to offer more challenge than others. I would say play to your strengths. I honestly, I've kind of felt that I would be better suited for city council because I think my legal training makes me more attuned to legislative type decisions, whereas being mayor is more of an administrative role. But I still think that that would be a way that you can best serve the people that you're trying to get to elect you is by playing to those strengths. I guess as far as a starting point, I one of the things that I have run into quite a bit is the you can tell the people that are they just have a natural they naturally gravitate toward public service. They start small, they volunteer in campaigns, or they serve local legislators. That's where I see it most, staffers and so forth, getting part or becoming part of a campaign. Those would be the areas I think, you would be able to, if you were to immerse yourself in that way, you would then be able to see where you could probably offer the most, and then, direct your service objectives along those lines.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your comments and for again participating with me today. So I appreciate all that you've done, and we thank you for your time and best of luck in all of your service.
Okay, thanks, Will. It was nice to be here, and happy to be a part of it, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Law Schoolers. Before I let you go, there are four things I want to say. The first thing is if you enjoyed these episodes and if you enjoyed the website, I would invite you to go and join Law Schoolers Pro. And you can do that by going to lawschoolers.com/join. It's a way for you to support us, but there's also a lot of features there that I think you will enjoy. Second thing is that nearly all of our episodes are unedited. The only ones that aren't our pre-law materials, and the reason for that is so you can actually see the legal material in its raw form as I'm learning it as well. The third thing is that the information contained in these episodes are specifically only for educational purposes. They're not to be used as legal advice, and with that, the fourth thing is if it is used as legal advice, we are not liable. That is, Law Schoolers is not liable for any legal outcomes. Thank you again for enjoying the show. Have a good one.